Well, welcome everyone. I'm John Kieran, Chief Juicer of Brain Juicer, and it is my pleasure to be in conversation. I'm not sure if it's an interview, in conversation with Chris Frank and Paul Magnone, who have written the most brilliant book. I know that they're blushing already. We're not in the same room, but they're blushing. I know. The colour of their book, which is Drinking from the Fire Hose, Making Smarter Decisions Without Drowning in Information. And if you haven't read it, CNBC named it the must-have book for the holiday season. The Economist said this is how to curate the customer conversation. You are in for a treat, and I hope through the conversation you'll get a teaser, let's say, for some of the great ideas and very pragmatic ideas as well, applicable ideas that are contained within it. But Paul, Chris, can I perhaps? Perhaps you could do a little introduction for yourselves as well.
Paul, did you want to? All right, so I'll start out. So thank you, John, first of all, for that introduction. So this is Christopher Frank. I am blushing. So I currently, in addition to writing a book, my day job, I am vice president of in market research at American Express in the Global Marketplace Insights Group. Prior to that, and kind of where the foundation and fabric of this book was also built from, I spent 10 years at Microsoft in their global marketing team. So these lessons are really built on from the front lines and very pragmatic, practical experiences, which we can discuss in the next 45 or 50 minutes.
And now, Paul, we've got to have the Tom Waits of the business book world arriving with head cold.
With head cold and all, hopefully it's not painful to listen to. So I am Paul Magnone. I'm Chris's co-author on Drinking from the Fire Hose, and my background, 21 years in IBM in sales and business development, and currently with OpenNet Telecom out of Dublin, Ireland, which is a software provider of technology to telecommunications companies, and I'm the Vice President of Business Development and Strategic Alliances. So where Chris and I come together is that he is on the development of the market research viewpoint, and I am the consumer of the market research as I have started business units through the years and continue to do so today. So with Drinking from the Fire Hose, it is that combined perspective, both sides of that coin, that we try and reflect.
And you're also the lucky, delighted recipient of a new baby daughter 3 weeks ago.
Yes, in fact, I am. So I have a two-year-old and a three-week-old, and life is good.
Very good, very good. And you're not sounding sleepy at all. Cool, it's great. Very good. So, Kathy, look, should we just crack in? Are you happy?
Yes, just jump in there.
Okay. Well, look, what I wanted to do, guys, if it's all right, is do a little setup of in the way that you do, and then I'd like to talk about the whole subject of data. And how it can be used using your own 7 questions, if you like, on the subject itself rather than on a particular category. Let's say the category is how companies make decisions in general, you know, and how they use data to do so. And perhaps use your 7 questions and, you know, kind of reveal both the book and your, you know, great insights, as well as, you know, share something about you know, how best to make decisions in a modern world with too much data. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, that sounds terrific, John. Did you just want me to jump in and build on that?
Sure.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we keep talking about this, you know, the premise of this book and the 7 questions, you know, were built from the front lines. And one thing that we see how companies make decisions, you know, we both were, you know, I worked at Fortune 50 companies. Currently, Paul's worked at large organizations. He's now with a fast-growing startup. We worked with venture capitalists. And there is a consistent theme that we see around how people make decisions. or struggle with making decisions. And it's around this concept, you know, what we call permission. People seem to need permission in order to engage in the information, consume the voice of the customer, you know, gather market competitive data, and they don't. They either wait to be asked, or it becomes very hierarchical. That, you know, well, this is your function, your market research, so you go in and analyze the information, or, you know, you're in engineering, so you go in and design the product. And this concept of permission, once we, you know, kind of step back, we start to see that, you know, how do you give people permission, give them a degree of confidence and conviction to go into that room when a decision needs to be made and have them, you know, ask, you know, engage in a meaningful way to make a smarter decision. And that is really the genesis of these seven questions. These seven questions are really the permission that they need to start the dialogue. It's a way for them to engage with their colleagues in a new and different way, even if it's outside of their specific discipline area.
So is how you make smarter decisions the essential business question for organizations? Because that's your first question. That's the, you know, what is the essential business question to be answered here?
I think the essential business question can be applied many ways. You can ask that of an organization itself, but with respect to a product launch or a customer situation or an investment, M&A, for example, it's situational. And quite often, I think we get caught up in the minutiae, in the details, and don't take a step back and say, what problem are we trying to solve? So the essential question is better stated, I wish I knew. So you're trying to reveal that indispensable piece of information, which is that breakthrough moment that helps you make that decision. But true to form, what people typically do is they have data, they dive into the data, they create more data from it, and suddenly you're under a mountain of data. It could be something that you created. It could be an influx from the thousands of sources that bombard us every day. But they haven't taken a step back and say, what problem am I trying to solve? And that's the core of the essential question.
Okay. And so businesses, organizations, you know, should always start there. Whatever data is being used for, if you could have the I wish we knew X, I wish we knew in the mobile world, you know, the mobile telephony world, what the next big trend might be, or whether, you know, whether landlines and fixed lines will disappear in the future, or whatever it might be, you know, related to your business, or Chris, related to yours, I wish I knew whether plastic cards in people's wallets will still exist in 3 years' time, or will it all be on the telephone, all on the mobile?
Right. Well, I would. I'm sorry, Paul. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's very much focused on what that business unit needs and whether that business unit is willing to listen to the answer. So, if as a market researcher you're, you know, producing content and not in line with the business unit, then it's just more noise. Chris, you've got a great example of a business unit saying, well, it doesn't really matter what the results come back on the survey because we're going to go, you know, pursue this business anyway.
Right. I mean, I was working with a general manager at the time, and he wanted to assess a program, and he wanted to make some significant business decisions, and how does he move forward with the program, where does he invest, and he's like, I need information from the market. I want to understand where, you know, the customer's head is at, what their habits and practices are, you know, what do they think of this program? He's like, I need to make a decision. I need this information. I'm like, terrific. You know, you want to make a fact-based decision. So we went into that room, and the way, you know, a great way to test, you know, if you have the right question or to test if you have the right objectives or if you're scoping the effort correctly is something I call you go to the polls. You push the extremes of what an answer can be. For example, and I said to him, his name was John, coincidentally. I said, John, you know, if I come back and there and they tell you they do not engage with the program, 0% satisfaction, this program is not right for them, are you willing to shut it down? And he looked at me, straight face, he's like, you clearly asked the wrong people. And I said, wait, let me get this straight. We didn't even get the results back, and you're already telling me I did it wrong. So you have to love this around our discipline of a market intelligence that, you know, if the results are right, they're brilliant, the program is perfect, the decision was spot on. If the decisions, if the results are wrong, you know, you had the wrong design, you talked to the wrong people, and you asked the wrong questions.
Yeah.
So that was a clear example. And this exercise of going to the polls, I think, is very useful when you're trying to make a decision or assess, you know, where you need to go. But, John, I also, when you talked about IWIC, I want to highlight something. IWIC and this what is the essential information question number one in the book, it's not even, doesn't even have to be as big as tell me, you know, are landlines going away or are, you know, what's going to happen with mobility and financial payments? Because those are those big questions that people struggle with. What is, you know, the I wish I knew, what is that piece of information you need to know literally just to take the next step? And to take that next step towards a decision with a high degree of confidence. So, and I think that's where people get tripped up. They're trying to answer, you know, well, I have to put together a 3-year plan and make that 3-year plan decision. No, what do you need? What's a stepping stone to get there? So I wish I knew, what is the essential question, is all geared to what is that next piece of information that you will allow you to move forward, you know, a step. So it becomes very tangible and people can get their head around that. And that's how a series of steps will get you to make a smarter decision.
Right. So let's take the second question. And again, let's see if we apply it to the world of data collection, data analysis, and data, springboarding into decision-making. Where do you feel, where is your customer's North Star? So in the context of the data industry, or maybe there isn't such a thing as a data industry, there's only a decision-making industry, but what is the customer's North Star? What is our North Star, do you think?
So in terms of the North Star, you know, it is, you know, the customer knows what they want. The customer has the money to spend, and in this day of, you know, social, mobile, local, whether it's on their phone, where they're shopping, you know, small, or, you know, they're online, the choice of what they buy and what's available to them in terms of brands and the adverts that they see, it's streaming at them. And you need to understand very clearly. In fact, I give an exercise to my team. In 5 words or less, tell me what the customer wants. And if we can't answer that, and if I don't get a consistent answer across my team or from the business unit who are building the product, they are not clear on where the customer wants to go or, more importantly, maybe what their pain point is. The customers may not know where they want to go, but the customers are very clear on what's causing, you know, what their barriers are to achieve what they want to achieve with a certain product or experience or service.
So in five words or less, here we go. What is it that clients of market research want?
Right. Are you saying for me to answer that?
Yeah, if I don't know. Yeah, if possible.
First of all, you don't get to use my own questions back on me. if you didn't get the briefing memo on this discussion,
position heal myself. It's great.
So no, I will gladly answer that. So 5 words or less. So John, if you could tell me the question again.
What does the clients, the buyers of market research want? What is their North Star?
I want the person sitting across from me to be smarter than me.
Yeah.
I am not looking for someone just to be an extra pair of hands just to execute.
Yeah.
When I am hiring someone for market research, I want them to bring a perspective, a different level of experience from working with their other clients, from working in this industry, that they will then inform, and that's how we're going to get to insights, because I know my business better than they ever will. I know how to do market research. You know, I've been doing this for decades. What they're bringing to me is perspective. You know, we could all design surveys. We could all collect, you know, hundreds of interviews in, you know, a 48-hour period. That's not the value add of my true trusted agency partners.
Well, and I think Chris just hit the nail on the head with one word there, trust. So being in the business unit and then working with market research folks, my worst experiences are when I get a big fat deck as the answer to a question of a market opportunity, and it is just a sea of numbers without any perspective. My best experiences are when the market researcher comes in with a point of view, not necessarily dictating where we need to go, but with a point of view, and then has an iterative experience with us in the product prep and the product launch. So we need to, as Chris and I say, illuminate the unexpected as we go and look for the customer's North Star. Well, it's much better to do that if you've got both people with flashlights and eyes open.
Fantastic.
And I'll give you the four words. I'm looking for a fact-based research partner. I'm not just looking for a research partner or a fact-based research consultant. I'm not looking just for a strategy consultant. I'm not just looking for research. I'm looking for, you know, someone to guide me, to help inform my strategy, to stretch my thinking based on new facts and information that is not available, that other people do not have or have not consumed it in that way. They could take the same information and look at it differently. So a fact-based research consultant.
Yeah, and I think
The other thing about the North Star is there's an element of about this where you are the steward, the curator of the customer voice, and making sure that the customer's viewpoint is really reflected. So ideally, the customer or the customer set, that market set, is telling you exactly what that constant is, what is important to them, what is their North Star. But occasionally, you're not hearing from them, or you're making a proactive decision without them, and so there are techniques that you can take to protect the customer's interest, something that we refer to as the customer impact assessment, and Chris is quite eloquent about that. So, Chris, can you?
Sure. You know, when we make decisions today, many times it is company-centric, and I think a lot of, folks feel this way. You know, you analyze a decision for the financial impact, and you crunch the numbers, you know, you define the return on investment and how you're going to, you know, find these dollars and how you're going to pay it back. And a lot of great analysis is done on the financial impact. But what we have found over the years is how much time, or in fact, how little time is ever done to seriously consider the customer impact. And by customer impact, you know, we came up with the four questions. And one, how are you going to manage this change for the customer? Two, what are you going to, how are you going to, is it right for the customer? Does this align with their either pain points, their needs, or their aspirations? And which one does it map to? Because then it's going to inform your marketing, your strategy, and your business development. And then finally, how are you going to, you know, service and communicate this? So these are the four questions we have seen. The purpose of the customer impact assessment is designed to say, when you sit down and have a financial impact discussion, you also give equal airtime to a customer impact. And by doing both halves, you will make sure that you will make the right decision, not only for the business, but for the customer. And, you know, a lot of times people, I think, they'll say, oh, yes, we thought about the customer and this is right for the customer. But by actually forcing answers to these questions. And the other thing I want to highlight, John, is, you know, these are the four questions that we have seen. You know, come up with your own four questions, but the point is, make sure you give equal time to assessing the impact of a decision on a customer. And do that in a structured way across your major changes, across your business units, and you will make, you know, much more informed and solid decisions than normally you would just simply based on looking at the bottom line.
Well, I don't know if you've had the pleasure of reading it, but Obliquity by John Kay, the economist, puts an even more extreme version of the very good advice that you've just shared, which is that managing businesses for shareholder value is the single most sort of destructive force of the last 25 years in management, because basically profit cannot be managed directly. It should be the consequence of doing awesome things for customers. And actually, you know, his argument is even more focus on the customer, and profits will be the consequence of doing that well. But you both live in a more practical, real life, real world. So as you say, maybe even-handed at the least is a great way to do it. So your third question is, should you believe the squiggly line? One of the things I'm conscious of is data gathering used to be, in the metaphor of your book, like lowering a bucket into the well and carefully pulling up the bucket of your data and tipping it into the little pre-prepared cups of segmenting your data. And now, as you highlighted, you're trying to cope with a fire hose of data coming at you, much of which varies, much of which moves up and down in tiny, this is your squiggly line. And I just wonder how, you know, if you could tell us a little bit about, should we believe the squiggly line, or how should we cope with it?
Yeah, the key to the squiggly line is understanding that whether you're looking at financial metrics, customer feedback, or anything else, even sports scores or sports statistics, there's a difference between what's happening in the moment and what is your long-term business strategy. So there could be an uptick or a downtick, but will that change your business strategy fundamentally? And in that moment, when that line tacks, much like a sailboat changes, right? It changes course briefly. What is the overall effect of that? What is the competitive element of that? So if you're up 2 points, you could celebrate, but what difference does it make if your competitor is up 7 points? Perhaps you're up 10 points this quarter because there was a run on your product, but your product is snowblowers and there was a blizzard. What difference does that make to your seasonal business? So it's putting it in context, triangulating by absolute position, changes over time, and comparative measures, rather than celebrating that short-term, hype-driven number that we all get fixated on. And these numbers bombard us. They're, you know, look at any stock ticker, put on almost any TV program, any news program, and there's just a flood coming at you, and you almost can't help but react in a knee-jerk fashion. And so our advice and counsel is not to ignore it, but to put it in context. Take a step back.
I mean, the classic example of that, which we all participate in, of course, is political elections. And the almost daily polls, or twice daily polls by the time it gets close to an election, which are read as having deep significance. And of course, they're not. Nothing of the sort. I mean, things, big, significant changes happen quite rarely. I think, that fear, and therefore, you know, the not being buffeted by the daily hourly movements of anything is has got to be sound advice for modern times when, as you say, the information is coming at us thick and fast.
So yeah, and we feel that this is sound advice, but how many times do we, you know, anxiously wait with bated breath on those tracking results, you know, or we all pull together our balance scorecard, you know, for the month, and we go down it and we look for the red and green, and something is up 2 points and 3 points, and the emails start flying around. Look, you know, we moved the needle on, you know, awareness, or, you know, we moved the needle on satisfaction, you know, but it's what Paul is saying, you know, put that in context. And even if you are truly up 2 points, you know, competitors are flat, it's a significant change. Ask yourself, is that going to change your strategy? Is that going to, you know, is that a true celebration? And what does it mean from a decision-making point of view? And I think that last part is great. We're up. What does that mean from my investment, from my decisions? This is where we say we get tied up in the squiggly line, or, you know, trend lines and short-term movements, rather than looking at the mid to near to long-term.